A gift from a queen who had seen another woman in hell and thought to reach back a hand. With no thought of it ever being returned, a moment of kindness, a tug on a thread.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are bringing you all of the internet's most popular books and letting you know whether you should take time out of your busy schedule to read them. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. And this week, we are continuing our journey through Sarah J. Maas's ever-growing list of books so that we can finally finish them. I think she has 16 out currently with a lot more planned. So this week we're tackling Tower of Dawn, which is the sixth book in the series, if you don't count the novella Assassin's Blade. And I mean, I guess I'll just do spoilers for the first five, just in the sense that this book, you rewind the clock from book five to the start of book five, and that's when this book is taking place. So huge cliffhanger, end of book five, rewind that back, and now you're following Pale and his journey with Nesrin to Antica. And they're trying to convince the leader there to aid Aelin in her retaking of Terrasen and defeating Erewhon and his Volg soldiers. And that's kind of where the book starts. Also, Kale is paralyzed because of his injuries from Queen of Shadows. Yeah, Queen of Shadows. Yeah.
Bestie's and dad threw him across the room.
Yeah, so he has some dark magic in his spine. He cannot walk. And that is why he's going to see the healers in Antica, because they still have magic there and they don't like kill every magic person like Alderaan does. And yeah, that's where the book starts off. It's been 2 years since I've read it, so I think that's the best I can give for a summary.
It's a total POV shift. Switching to Nesta and Silver Flames, you know? Yeah. But you don't actually see your normal characters, like, at all.
Yeah,
it's literally a great time to bring out the tandem read, which,
yeah,
post me reading this became a thing, where you can tandem read it with Empire of Storms, and people have figured out the timeline, so you can tab your books and switch back and forth and get it all at once instead of reading the same time period twice, which those are two thick books. So, like, God bless y'all, but
take forever.
Yeah, my sister has still not finished.
But your sister's not a great case study for that.
She has, Casey's gonna love this, we were on a vacation, and since then she has now listened to 3.5 Allie Hazelwood audiobooks. She's an Allie Hazelwood fan now.
Oh my god. No.
I said, okay, I'll allow you to read Bride next.
Incorrect.
Anyway. Okay. Do you guys have reviews?
Yeah. I have a 3-star review from Goodreads. It's a little long, so I'm just going to cut out portions. After Empire of Storms, I was incredibly reluctant to start Tower of Dawn. After finishing on such a cliffhanger, I just didn't feel like leaving that host of characters I'd grown to love behind and venture into a land with a character that was so utterly pulled apart and vilified in Queen of Shadows. Mm-hmm. Kale had become such a figure of hate to me, bitter and angry and mean. I really didn't see how or indeed why this book was even necessary. And the buildup was long. Really long. Shout out to Mary for keeping me going on this one. For a good 60% of the book, I thought it was a romance wrapped in some sappy Kill Bill style healing montage for Kale. But slowly, very slowly, my opinion did change. And she goes on saying, like, it probably would have been a 1, but it's a 3 because of the lore that we find out during this book. And okay. Also, she likes Nesrin, so.
Hey, right. Gotta respect a badass woman. I have 3 like one sentence ones that
My favorite.
Casey's gears. 4 stars, all caps. I am a Kale apologist.
Oh, God.
4 stars.
No.
The best in the series solely for making me swoon over Kale of all people.
No.
Yeah, here's a better one. Terrible. 4 stars. I can't wait for Irene to meet Aelin.
Yes. Yeah.
Sounds exciting.
That one. Well, yeah. We'll get into the spoiler section on that one.
Okay. I'm ready. I only have one today. Shocking, I know.
Wow.
1 star review. A horror story. Me picking up this book innocently, thinking it's the next one in the series. Me gradually filled with horror as I realized that 5 chapters in, it's still about Kale. Me rushing to the Goodreads to read reviews and finding out the entire book is about him. And that's it. 1 star.
That's very valid and fair.
I will say that's how I went into the book. I had no idea. It was before people were freaking out over Sarah J. Maas. I was just kind of on the front end of it. And so I was just reading them for funsies. And I got to this one. I was like, wait, where'd everyone go? But, okay. Well, overall, 4.3 out of 5 from Goodreads. 4.6 out of 5 for Amazon. So it's like still a well-loved piece of the Throne of Glass canon.
Amazingly and shockingly.
I'm just going to go first. I, however many years ago I read this, gave it 4 stars. I think it's a great story. I think it's, yeah, it's a bummer that you have to like repeat this time frame and from different POVs. But I think there's some really badass women in this book. And there's some really great like character introductions, character development, gets you excited for all of them to meet up in the final book. I had no issues with it. I was like, oh, bummer. I miss Aelin. But otherwise, I was like, yep.
I also gave it 4 stars. But like thinking back on it, I feel like that's too high for me. Because all of the Throne of Glass books, I would say I could read again and feel perfectly happy. I would just skip this book if I ever had to read the series again. Like, I just have no desire to read this book again. But I did appreciate what it added into the lore and myths of the world, because I think we needed to get outside of the continent in order to learn more about its history, because the history had been essentially gotten rid of entirely in the continent. So you needed a place that it wasn't completely abandoned and whitewashed and burned. So I liked that part of it. I like Nesrin. I still hate Kale. And I knew going in this was entirely about Kale, and I was extremely mad about it, because I think also Sarah J. Maas did herself no favors by ending Empire of Storms the way she did. And then she's like, okay, now Kale for 800 pages. So, too long.
Yeah. This book took me forever to read. I gave it 3 stars. I did not really like it. The women in this book are what saved it. Like, if it was not for all the amazing and badass women, as Caitlin said, who are like the only worthwhile characters in the book, I honestly like would have given it 1 star, which is shocking because y'all know I love Sarah J. Maas too. Like, I'm obsessed. This book was so fucking boring. Oh my gosh, it's just like pages and pages and pages of Kale just like, my back hurts. And then we flip to the healer, who is actually like a really cool person. And then we just get like another 100 pages of her being like, how will I heal Kale? And then at the very end of the book, there's like 14 plot twists. And I actually kind of felt similar to Crescent City 3, where I was like, only half of these make sense. And so, yeah, it was just, I did not feel like it was Shan's best writing. I did not really enjoy the story. I felt like it could have been half the length. I really did not think this needed to be a part of the series. I think that if they just showed back up and everyone was rejoined and we kind of got the backstory as we went in the next book, that would have been fine for me. But I also, my opinion on Kale did not change at all. I still hate him. I think he's really whiny.
Imagine the few people who were reading the series as they came out and they wait for a book and then they get this.
Wow. it might have made me just like stop reading the series. Like, I'm not going to lie. The disappointment would have been so heavy.
I want to talk to those people because I started reading the series when Queen of Shadows was the last book that I can't come out. And then
these were coming out between ACOTAR books.
Yeah. So I read it in high school, like early high school. And then the last book that had come out was Queen of Shadows. And I lost track of the books and just didn't finish the series. I can't imagine if I had actually stayed in touch with the series and continued with each one coming out. I'm pretty sure I would have become an SJM hater.
Yeah, I was so disappointed.
I do think being able to pick up the final book afterwards makes it worth it. And I can't wait for Casey to finally get to read the finale because I think it makes you look back on Tower of Dawn a little bit like, oh, okay.
It is better because then everyone's coming together. So you kind of needed some of that backstory and seeing it yourself in order to move forward. And Kingdom of Ash is long and has a lot of plots and a lot of points of views because it is the finale book. A big war is about to happen.
Right. No, I did appreciate about the book that it pulls out of the continent and you get more of a perspective on like what else is going on other places, and that is helpful. But yeah, I have a lot of critiques of this book.
Okay. Well, first, more plot or character driven?
I mean, it's plot driven, but like, I could see an argument for character driven, but they're still ruling. Their whole thing is to recruit this country to war while also healing Kale. And I don't think he has a little bit of character growth, but I don't think it's enough to like say it's character driven.
Yeah, there's a lot of character development, but I still think it's plot driven.
It is plot driven, I would say. Because none of the character development that happens really changes what happens.
And some of the characters are just brand new characters. So,
yeah, right. A lot of them.
We're just figuring who they are.
Actually, like 95% of
them. Yeah. Yeah.
I did see some reviews of people like, how can SJM create like such amazing characters so late in the series? And this is the first time we're meeting them. Like that was some of the comments that were like 3-star reviews. Cause they were like, oh God, I hate Kale. And I hate that this is one of my favorite characters. Like a lot of people liked Irene as like one of their favorite characters in the series. And they hate that she was introduced in this way.
I'm not a Kale hater. I'm a Kale meh. So like that didn't bother me that much, but definitely doesn't live up to the women around him, that's for sure.
No.
Yeah.
What about the pacing of this book? They just keep getting longer.
The pacing of this book was so bad. It was, like, actually so bad. Like, I cannot emphasize enough, because I just read this book, so I'm, like, the most recent read. I think until page, I'm not kidding, I don't remember the exact page count of a book, but if the book is 800 pages, nothing happens for a full 700. And that is not an exaggeration. They are just healing Kale for a full 700 pages. And the last 100, we get the plot of the book. And that's part of what made me so mad is like, it's so hard to just like sit in Kale's mind for so long.
I think it would have been, well, A, more interesting if we liked Kale and actually wanted him to be a redeemable character. And B, I appreciate what SJM was trying to do because she was introducing an entirely new country that we barely knew about. Like we just knew a name kind of in the past books and literally diving into their entire political system, which is completely different from any of her other countries. And then having to talk about that country's culture and the politics behind it. Like I can appreciate like how much political like subterfuge was under this and like, you know, the heirs are going to have to fight to the death essentially to become the next leader. And like they're riders on these like Griffins, birds,
like, yeah, birds. They're like eagles or
I
something.
kept thinking like ostriches for some reason, but ostriches don't fly, so that's like a really big comparison.
No, I was thinking like giant bald eagle.
Yeah,
Giant
I
bald
was
eagle.
thinking like giant eagles.
And I thought that was interesting. Like, I was very fascinated with learning a lot about the country, but I think she's tasked herself really hard on this one to put the one of the most unlikable characters in all of her series as the main person to drive this series forward.
I agree that of all the books, the pacing, this is not the best one. And I read it so long ago, but I remember it being like, okay, when's stuff gonna happen? And the fact that I still remember that says a lot about the pacing. I do think it was a fun story still. Like, you could picture every detail because she wrote every detail. Good or bad, pick it or leave it, you know, but you definitely weren't not imagining what was happening.
Yeah, no, you were. Okay. So would you watch? I'm gonna change this question a little bit because I think we'd all watch a movie or TV show about it. But if they were gonna do like a movie or TV show series about this Throne of Glass, would you want this book to be its own movie, or would you want the events of this book to be smashed into a movie combining with the last one?
So we do
Yep.
Game of Thrones style,
Yep.
where it's
Game of
a mini
Thrones, tandem
series.
read. Yep.
Yeah, tandem
You
read, mini series. These things are happening at different times.
have to, or else all the people would be like, why am I watching this? Like,
Yeah.
the readers get it, but the watchers, they wouldn't get it.
No.
Yeah, that's true. They'd be
Because all
like,
the
wait.
action's happening in Empire of Storms.
Yeah. Which is why she shouldn't have made this its own book.
I can't wait to hear your thoughts on this after you read Kingdom of Ash.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure my mind could be totally changed, but you know.
I don't think you'll be totally changed, but
No.
I think you'll be like, oh, okay.
You appreciate it a little bit more. My mind didn't change on it.
No, but it'll make you be like, oh, I see why.
Okay. Well, that brings us to our busy girl reading.
I think it's like a two or a
Yeah,
three.
I was gonna say it too.
And I'm also gonna agree with the two.
It's just, it's slow. I mean, I don't want to say boring because I was entertained throughout and interested to see where she was taking this because it was a completely new direction that I never expected. But it was so slow to pick up and put down. And the entire time I was just like, okay, I just have to get through this so I can get back to Aelin and I can get back to Rowan and my sexy fey males. Okay.
Yeah.
That's exactly. This is that book that you just power through because you want to finish the series.
Every
You know.
series has one.
Yes, and this is the one.
Okay, are we ready for the spoiler alert section?
Yes.
I mean, we're what? Six spoiler alerts deep in the series. Lots to discuss. Okay, we've kind of started talking about this, but first question. What did you think of the new setting in Antica or Antica? How about the new main characters being Kael Nesrin, Irene, and Sartak? Girl, she did us so dirty with this book series and all the names.
Yeah, this was the
Yes.
most complicated series of names. And she even admits it in press conference. She's like, I'm never doing that again. I'm going to make it much more easier names in the future.
Well, no,
Yeah.
that's right. You can't blame it on her being 16. These books she was writing as a grown woman. At
Yeah, you're like,
this point in
girl,
the
come on.
series, she's writing as a grown woman.
Okay, well, I'm gonna get on my soapbox because this is my main critique of the book.
Can't wait. Here we go.
Antica is a really interesting world. I actually loved exploring it and I loved learning the lore in it. I thought the society was really interesting. Also, it was clearly based on the Mongols, and I actually know a little bit about Mongol history. So like reading it was like really fascinating, and I really, really liked like the political background with the kids. However, I think SJM set it up to be really interesting and then actually did not live up to that. Because Still, most of the book is spent between Kale and Irene. And I like them, but like way too much time was just Kale and Irene sitting in a room. Like, they have this super fascinating world, and I feel like it would have been kind of easy to like work in more of it. Because like, if the book is 800 pages and the whole plot happens at page 700, we don't even really leave the palace until page 600. Like, that is when, around the point where Nezrin and Sartok leave for the villages that are like all about the flying, which was like one of the most interesting parts of the book. And it doesn't even happen till the end. And then we get like so much, like comparatively so little time in those worlds. Like, and there is like no subterfuge and scheming almost outside of like one instance between the siblings. I was set up to expect some weird Game of Thrones backstabbing ass shit. And it literally isn't even important except for one scene. And I was just like really disappointed with that. I was like, I feel like she set up the book and had a lot of interesting elements that she actually didn't follow through on.
That's fair. I loved the world too. I think weirdly, one of the most memorable parts for me is like the healing tower where we find Irene. I think learning about like the little politics inside of this tower of, are they priestesses?
Kind of, yeah.
Kind Not of healers.
But sort of, yeah.
This tower of healers has its own little world contained within it. And I just thought it was like very, I don't know, cute is the word, but you kind of see Irene's like, I want something more. And
yeah.
And then the opportunity falls in her lap. And it's just, I mean, starting with something that complicated and all it is a tower. You knew there was going to be a lot of world building. But yeah, you get to the end, you're like, okay, we're leaving this world. Why did we come to this world?
Yeah, I think she did pretty conveniently wrap up the politics of the world.
Yeah.
Especially with like naming Sartak the heir without any fight, without any issues, because they kept saying like they're gonna fight to the death, like this is almost guaranteed going to happen. And you could have still had Sartak the exact way that she wrote him, of like, I don't want to fight my siblings, I want to be a family, I don't think family should do this,
the reluctant conqueror.
Yes, I think she could have written that and have been fine, but I almost wish they didn't answer the question of like, he's the heir. I wish that never even happened. Like, they just left it open.
I feel like she could have set this up to be its own novella or series of novellas in this world, like post everything, Sartag's back and whatever. And you have these characters you already know, but she kind of closed the door on it.
Right. But I'm glad you bring that up, Catherine, because I was actually really disappointed by the ending. It's really action packed and you learn a lot. Like, Maeve being the Vol Queen, love, makes so much sense, actually makes everything about Maeve make more sense.
If you go back and listen, we've slipped up so many times.
We've been so close to accidentally telling you that she's the Vol Queen.
That is the hardest one, because I forgot you don't even find that out until like the end of this book, and I was like, I always slip. So,
no, because I think it was Crown of Midnight. You didn't realize that she had said that.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, no, that's a spoiler. But anyway, bye.
I think Empire of Storms, I said something too. And I remember cutting it out.
Well, I remember in the last episode, I even was like, I just don't get what Maeve's power is. And you two were both like,
I'm just so glad it was still a surprise to you, because I suck.
I think I was just like not really paying attention, because if you don't know it, I'll find it really hard to believe you would guess it.
No.
So like, you could even heavily imply, and I think I would still not put two and two together unless I was really like focused. But anyway, so the ending is just a lot, and it felt a little convenient. Like, everything kind of worked together in a way that was just like really easy, and everything kind of like, every character we liked triumphed and survived and not only did they survive, but they got like the best case scenario. And it just felt really, and everything ended up connecting back in a way that just felt too clean to me. Like that random guy ended up being the shapeshifter's uncle. Like
Lysandra, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, Kale surviving was so cheap to me. Like that weird deal they made. And there's actually like no bad consequences. They just like their lives are connected now, but they both get to live. Like I was just like, whatever.
Here's what I'll say. She does throw you a nice little happy ending bow kind of bone before she ruins your life.
This next book ruins your life a bit.
Okay. Well, thank God, because I'm like, that was way too easy.
It's low stakes because the next book is so high stakes. I think that's really what she was doing. It was like, here's a little lovely little reprieve. Now let me rip your soul out.
Yeah. But I do agree that it kind of wraps that country up in a nice bow. Because it, yeah, like you said, Caitlin, it closes the door on the future of writing about that country, which I was very interested in the Rook and the horse lords and the riders.
I mean, you still could, but like, it's not going to be nearly as interesting now.
Now it's just going to be a love story between Sartak and Nesrin. Like, that's just going to what it's going to be. Like, there's no political intrigue.
Love.
Oh, also, they're cute.
I pictured Sartak as like Boo Boo Stewart the whole time I read it. I'm so sorry.
No.
You know what I kind of pictured him as is, oh my God, totally forgot his name. Who is that one really cute Indian actor?
Kumail Nanjiani?
No. Is he Indian? Is he Pakistani?
He's Pakistani. But
yeah, I'm sorry.
What is he in?
Oh my God. Once I like figure it out, it's actually Dev Patel. Oh my God. There we
Dev
go.
Dev Patel.
that's better than Boo Boo Stewart.
Yeah.
I pictured him as Dev Patel the whole time, especially because Dev Patel has that like nice guy energy. Oh, I love him.
Well, I think it could have been interesting because I don't think you needed to include the air thing at all. Like it could have just been left unsettled because Sartak basically controlled the military at that point because he had all of the connections with the Rook Riders. So he could have gone to war for Aelin or Nesrin and he didn't even need to make him heir.
And it actually would have been more interesting if he did betray the family to do that. Like that would have been a more epic story instead of everyone just at the end agreeing to hold hands and sing Kumbaya. And yeah, we'll go to war.
Although I did like that one of the princesses turned out to be Volg.
Yes,
that was interesting.
Me. And it did make sense as well. I was like, oh.
I also think weird. We could make a business being editors, guys.
We could hire me. Yeah. I will get your story right, babe. But yeah, the one thing that didn't bother me as well is there was like a lot of like very protective, uncomfortable overtones about this fetus. Like, I was like, you guys are really going to die to protect a pregnant woman who is a demon. Like, I get that we don't want that outcome, but you're really risking everyone's lives here just because she's pregnant. Okay.
I think it needed to happen, just knowing the future of Kingdom of Ash, because it proves Irene's theory that the Volg are a kind of parasite and can be killed through healing powers, which is a lot less destructive than Aelin's power, which basically kills host and person and burns them to crisp. Oh, now you can heal the Volg out of them.
Also, the Crescent City overtones in this book, oh my God.
Yes, that's why you have to read Throne of Glass first.
Yeah.
I was like, no, wait. As soon as we got to the point where they were figuring out the healers could like banish the Volg.
That's the other time I slipped up. It was Crescent City 3. We were talking about something. I was like, oh, I mentioned the Volg. And you're like, what? Never mind. Because the one lady in the casket looks like Maeve.
Yeah, that's what you said. And I was like, Caitlin.
Yeah.
I was like, shit, sorry. We didn't know about Maeve.
Okay. Anyway, we're way out of our like chronological.
We are. Thing. Let's talk about.
Oh, okay. Sorry. There's one more thing I want to say. Never mind. I'm going to rewrap this again. I really liked the parallels between Nesrin being from the southern continent and moving to Adarlan and kind of wanting to move back, basically. And then Irene being from the continent, moving to the Southern Continent and then moving back to Adarlan. Like, I love their kind of like foils almost in their journey and their experiences. Like, they were like the same, like flip flop, but then that like changed how they like interacted with their countries a lot.
Yes, I agree. They're like parallels. I don't know.
Yeah. Foils, parallels.
Yeah. They both dabble with kale.
Well, and neither of them should have.
No, yeah. But I do appreciate that neither of them had some petty cat fight, which I don't think Esham would ever do that. But I was slightly worried that Nesrin would come back and be bitchy about it, even though I know she wouldn't because he's not worth it.
No, a hot flyer man. Who cares? Yeah.
But like, I was worried.
Traded so hard. Like, actually, like Nesrin, I'm sorry, Irene is great. Nesrin fully dunked on Irene and Kale. Like, she's like the...
Nesrin is the future, basically, queen of her home country.
Yeah, of the most powerful, wonderful society that exists. Like, I was like, oh my God.
Well, let's roll it back to the beginning of the book and talk about Kale showing up at Torres Esme, the healing power where all these cute little healers have this little community, where Irene sought sanctuary, basically. This, Catherine, you phrased this for a fight. It says, we all hated him before. Did he grow on you in this book?
Well, that was the purpose of this
journey. Let's talk.
Yeah, he had a healing journey. Let's talk. That's the point of this book. He's supposed to be redeemed almost by this book, and to make you.
He's supposed to be redeemed. Here's my argument for Kale. And I'm not arguing like for him as like a good guy necessarily, but I think this book shows you that, and you see it with the other characters too. Like, every character in the series has flaws, and like, it takes all of them to make up this whole, but Kale gets called out on his, essentially, and he does go through this journey to be like, oh, I was so ignorant. I needed to see a world outside of my world to understand what Aelin is fighting for and understand the stakes. And I don't know, I think he's still broken in the end, you know? And I think it's a metaphor for like, he's still not a perfect person in the end, but he is where he needs to be to help Aelin.
Yeah, I get it. I just still hate him.
I know.
He's just so whiny. And like, I think I've made this comparison before, but he's just like Jon Snow, where he's so obsessed with honor, but it's like sort of pathetic because he just like spends all his time like worried if he's doing the right thing and feeling all this shame and like beating himself up. And it just feels like gratuitous almost. Like, it's like almost narcissistic to like think you're that important, you know? It's just like, can you just get over it and like be helpful? Like, it's just, oh.
Well, he thinks he has the moral high ground in all cases and that his sense of moral code is better than all else, which is why I don't appreciate when he's like going after Aelin for her past and her crimes, and she's just kind of like, I had to do this to survive. You got lucky and to be born into a privileged family, given the position of captain of the guard at such a young age, even though like you're essentially not that. You were just appointed to that.
He has to take this journey to remain a character in the book because his world was like confined to a castle, and his world has to keep getting bigger for him to realize, oh man, my priorities were skewed.
He
does have to like reconcile his disagreements with Aelin, which is a big part of the book, is he kind of does realize he was in the wrong with her.
Now go sit in the corner and think about what you've done.
Yeah, because I agree with you. It's like, how is he going to like come back and help Aelin if he could never like reconcile his...
He can't be making petty comments every single time she talks.
Yes, he needs to stop being a distraction.
Yeah.
He had no perspective. So yeah. This whole book is him gaining perspective.
I will say that's why I do love Irene for him, is because she also had prejudice against him because she was forced to heal him, even though his kind, in a sense, killed her mother. The King's Guard killed her mother. And she goes into the healing And basically it's just like, yeah, I'm not going to help you because, yeah. Like, and then she learns she's quicker to grow than him, obviously. Like after one session, she grows from that. So that's, it's an interesting foil to him to show that she's the more mature person and that humans can grow. And also she teaches him about her experience and saying, yeah, like the Kingsguard murdered my mother just because she was healing people. And I have that same power and they will come after me and they will kill me. And all I want to do is save my people. And that's it.
I want to skip ahead because we've answered some of the questions you had in here about the politics of this other world and Sartek and Nezrin shipping them. But also in this new world, we kind of mentioned it, a lot of myths and lore that they realize are going to be helpful to Aelin fighting the Vog because of the Stygian spiders and things. And that's how you figure out about Maeve. And they're like, oh, shoot, now we got to get back to Aelin and tell her this stuff. Like, what did you think about working that into these, like working in these discoveries while they just happen to be over there?
I did really like the lore and the additions to the lore. Obviously, learning that the Vog are parasites makes a lot more sense in the context of the entire SJM universe. And it also makes Maeve and all her choices make a lot more sense. Like, not only like what is her power, which I mentioned before, but also just like why she behaves the way she does, like why she's so isolationist, why she values loyalty so much, why she's so, you know, secretive and seems to place such a high value on almost like random things, you know, like these lore kind of explain why she's so obsessed with like power and with protecting herself and like keeping these like extremely powerful warriors close to her. So that alone like really changed the way I read and think about the previous books because it adds a lot of more context to her actions. And yeah, I really liked that the spiders were women. I was like, hell yeah.
I love that they were her handmaidens and they came yeah. over with her to kind of escape her husband and his brothers. Mm-hmm. And then she gained so much power and they didn't even recognize her when she came over, when they came over and she got two of them gone, was going to get the third one gone. Mm-hmm. But Brannon stopped her and stole the keys. And knew she was trouble and was like, you're not right. There's some darkness in you. And she was so fearful of his fire that she kind of went along with it. And that's why she's been trying to get the word keys back. And it's just, yeah, it once I read that scene, like my jaw was on the floor and I was like, it all makes sense. You've been planning this since day one. It mm-hmm. all connects. It all makes sense. All those things I didn't understand suddenly become very clear about Maeve and how she's really truly the most evil person in this book.
Yep.
Yeah, and it makes, spoiler alert for Crescent City 3, it makes the Hind having the firepower all the more like meaningful, her being descended from Brennan.
Yes, it does. The connections and the potential feel very relevant. Assassin's Blade teases a lot about the connection between Irene and Aelin. And you guys loved it when I like picked out that moment in one of the other books when Manon and Aelin fight. And the reason Aelin saves her is because she feels that like tug of a thread. And then that theme is then carried over and is a big part of this book where Irene has been saved. And we know that it's Aelin, but she doesn't. What did you guys think of all of that?
Well, because she's just mentioned one off in Assassin's Blade. And you're just kind of like, who is this girl? Why is she important? Like, if you haven't read the rest of the books, you have no idea who this woman is. And it's like a full ass story. It's the second story in Assassin's Blade. And that's when you realize like, oh my God, Aelin and her actions as Selena saving women who are being dominated by a system and killed and raped by a system and by men in power and her standing up to it even when she was like 16 years old, she got allies from that. And like you see that at the end of Empire Storms, of like how many people owe debts to Aelin, and she's calling them in to not save herself, but save her kingdom and save her family. And it's always in good faith. It's not like being forcible. It shows the power of her and the power of her image and the power of like a badass woman leader that is empathetic while also rules with compassion and also brutality in some ways, but in a good way. Like she's willing to get the job done and has gone through so much shit.
Irene's kind of the final tug of strings, pulling everything together for Aelin. And it's like she sees this quality in people and saves them. And, you know, you go from book one, you're like, she's an assassin. She's just killing people for funsies. And then you're seeing, no, she's done all these acts of justice and it's going to pay off in the end. So this, I feel like, as you're really seeing it start to come together completely, like you said, it kind of starts at the end of the last book, but this is where you're like, okay, everything she's ever done is now finally falling into place, and it's kind of getting you ready for what's next.
Yes, and one of the reasons I really loved it is I think this book has this very strong theme of like vulnerable young girls don't stay that way. And there's this quote that like addresses this that like I think about a lot, and I don't remember actually any of the words other than like girls grow up to be women, but like the implication is like these vulnerable young girls in this book and also in real life don't stay that way. They grow up and then they're not the easily pushed around, easily taken advantage of, easily manipulated or victimized girls they used to be. And then you have people that you actually have to deal with because they can fuck with you back. And that theme is really present in this book because you see a lot of women who were very disempowered at the beginning of their life become empowered and are able to wreak havoc on the people who try to take advantage of them.
I think you're thinking of the Allie Raisman quote during her during the trial of Larry Nassar, of women or girls grow up to be women to be here to destroy you or something like that.
Yeah, but yeah, it's something like that. That quote of like silent girls grow up to be women with voices. And that I felt was very present in this story.
It's true. Throne of Glass is it's almost like a girl power series.
It is really, of all of her series, it really is girl power.
So let's go back briefly to, we find out Maeve is a Valg queen. Previously unknown to us that was even a thing. What did you think about this twist? What about her husband? Does that make you have any like conflicting feelings for her? Is she a gray character? Or is she just straight up evil? And what about these kings?
Almost gray. Just like a very dark gray. Because she does still like run a society. You know, like the Fae are still like doing well and seem to be like fairly well governed and like have a functioning world that they're a part of. Now, you know, Maeve is also like a rapist and a manipulator. So like, I don't mean like Maeve is a good person. I just mean that I think we see a lot of different sides of Maeve. And I think she's very complicated. I think at her heart, she's incredibly selfish and is out for herself. But like, sometimes if she's able to serve herself and do good things, she chooses to do so. I mean, she's also like trying to own and torture Aelin. So that ends. But that's one of the reasons why I think Maeve is a great villain, is because she's evil, but not like, she's evil, but complicated. I don't know if I'd say she's gray, but she's evil in a complicated way.
Well, I think that's why I say that she is the big bad of this book series, because she actually gets a backstory. Like, Erewhon does not get a backstory. He is just, you know, he's this guy 1,000 years ago, tried to take over the world, got trapped in a coffin. He he's out now and in the body of a Duke Parrington, and now he's trying to take over the world again. It's very like cut and dry, copy paste villain shit. Maeve is, she escaped a kind of situation where like it was three brothers. She married the oldest brother. She could see the inequities of it, and like she had probably a lot more power than them, but wasn't recognized for her power of manipulation and her power to like change people's memories and to really like take over a world if she so chooses. And then she leaves them and they're coming after her. And she did everything she did to prevent them from finding her. And if they did find her, that they wouldn't recognize her. And I think that makes it so interesting. And it also like speaks on issues of immortality and whether you still have a soul if you live truly that long and you see everything and you do everything and everything you do is for self-preservation. So that's why I say she is the big bad, because she does so much harm to the main characters, but they are thinking in like small terms of their lives. She's lived millennia.
I just think it's funny when we look back and in book one, we're like, oh, this king is so evil. And then you realize he's just a piece of the Duke, who's a piece of the Vogue, who's a piece of Maeve. Like, it gets bigger and bigger. And she does, you get her villain origin story, but also like you kind of get the vibe that these Vogue people are just inherently evil compared to the people in Aelin's world. Like different priorities. So
well, the parasites.
Right. It's just funny to go from the king, wow, to like, oh, the king was literally nothing.
Like a Hunger Games style fight to the death. And now we are in a giant, massive world on a global scale war,
right,
fighting multiple different enemies.
And she does something similar in ACOTAR. Like, oh, Amarantha, my gosh. And like, she's just a piece of it, you know? So it's cool to see how our world expands and so do our characters, both good and bad.
I think this is her most ambitious undertaking, though, for sure. World building, villain building wise.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yes. It's one of the situations where, like, the abuser was also abused.
Yeah.
You know, you don't forgive the abuser, but it adds some useful.
Villains are villains for a reason.
Yeah.
Someone did something to them.
Honestly, I think I can speak for all of us. We love a morally gray villain.
Yes. Love it.
And we love a powerful female villain. Oh my God.
Yes.
Respect it. Yep.
So I hate the like married with a baby ending, and SJM does this a lot, and this is one of the only things I hate about her writing, but I'm like, why are these fucking 20-year-olds just getting married? They've known each other for like 6 months. I get it, they've been through a lot. Also, because of this weird thing of how the fight ended up, their lives are tied together, so they're sort of married whether they want to be or not. But I just don't feel like everything needs to end this way with some sort of like fated connection that like is immortal, and all of a sudden we're like 25 and we're married and we're having children.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, at the end of this book, they were married in Antica before they go off. And I just like, they barely know each other. Like, I'm okay with Rowan and Aelin because they've gone through some shit, and she did it for the purposes of saving her kingdom because she knew she was about to be captured. And she thought her kingdom needed a king if she's gone. For this one, it feels a little convenient. I mean, they're bound for life. I think that could have been enough, and then just let them grow to like each other at least, or love each other. Yeah. I don't know. I don't love marriage tropes that quickly. I get that it's like medieval times playthrough, but I don't know.
What do we think of the ending of this one? Irene's magic powers like changed the tide of the war, and Navarin's headed back to Adarlan.
I like that we discover that healing is so important. I just think it's cool that they're sort of the solution. You know, they get to like do a thing, and that's nice. Irene being like the heir of Selba, I was kind of like, okay, did we have to do that? Does every person in this like gang of heroes have to be the heir of some god? Like, she can't just be like blessed or whatever. But yeah, I thought it was like a little bit overkill, but I do like the concept that they're all going back and like they're all gonna help and like they succeeded and like everyone, we figured shit out.
I will say, I think Caitlin's gonna touch on, like, was gonna touch on this for a second. It feels really too convenient right now.
Yes.
But it's coming. There's some shit that goes down in Kingdom of Ash that makes it all make sense.
I still think it's convenient, but
it is convenient, but I think you can excuse it a bit more with the ending of Kingdom of Ash.
I'm going to have to reread that one before we do it because there's too much that happens.
Oh my God. I almost feel like we might need to do part one, part two, or I don't know. We're just going to have to condense it a lot.
It was a no.
That book is thick. We've got to get her done. Okay. I don't know if there's really more to talk about because this is just setting us up for, you know, the finale, the grand finale.
Let's get back to Aelin. She's captured.
Let's talk about how I rarely cry while reading a book.
Oh, no.
No.
Anyway, teaser, join us when we finally get to that one. But
did you actually cry for Kingdom of Ash?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I did too. But like, that's not surprising. But you, well, that like, is surprising.
Like little tears, you know?
Yeah.
I don't like sob at a book ever. But you know what part I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, I 100% do.
Oh, no. You guys are scaring me.
Yep,
you
that's the be. Point. That's why I brought it up.
You should be.
Okay. Well, thank you for listening. These are just our opinions. Rate and review our podcast 5 stars. And engage in the conversation with us. We'd love to hear about your opinion. And you can do that pretty much everywhere at Busy Girls Pod. If you want to learn more about us and our book recommendations, find us at busygirlspod.com.
And you know, it's crazy. Kingdom of Ash is coming soon. We are actually going, this is our 97th episode, which is crazy for me to say. Like, it does not feel like that. But for episode 100, we've got to finish out the Sarah J. Maas series because we are SJM stans. So episode 100 will be Kingdom of Ash.
I like forgot we were doing that. Now I'm really excited.
Yeah. So special episode.
Hi, yay!
All right. Well, I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.